welcome to Nerdist Podcast number 274. A lot of live shows coming up. I'm going to be doing stand-ups in a lot of cities like Nashville, Chicago, Bloomington, because those all start in December, because November 10th, Saturday night on Comedy Central, 11 p.m., I believe, is my first hour-long stand-up comedy special, Mandroid. Please watch it. I'll hug you. Or I won't if you don't want me to. I'm easy. I'm a hug whore. I'll fucking whatever you want. So I'm your private hug dancer. Hugger for money. I'll do pretty much whatever you want me to do. I would like to thank Amazon.com for sponsoring this episode of the Nerdist Podcast. If you go to this podcast page and click the Amazon banner and shop as you normally would, you'd be supporting the Nerdist Podcast. But more importantly, please watch the comedy special Mandroid, airing November 10th on Comedy Central. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is Darren Bousman, who was a great guy, and I can tell you that because I called him Darren Bozeman for most of the podcast, and he didn't correct me. And then it kind of came out at the end. I was like, why didn't you correct me? And he was like, yeah, you know, whatever, it's fine. Really great guy, directed a bunch of films in the Saw series, 2, 3, and 4. Also Repo, the Genetic Opera. And he's just a really cool guy who kind of made his own path, which I think a lot of you who listen to the show do that or want to do that. So it's a good episode for you to listen to. So here it is, Nerdist Podcast episode number 274 with Darren Bousman. Also make sure and catch The Devil's Carnival, which is his latest film. And look him up on Google. Really interesting guy, and he's doing it all. I'm explaining the whole fucking podcast right now, so I'm going to shut up so you can just hear it happen organically. I love you.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
What did you just say?
Never mind.
Did you say this was like an After Dark radio show?
This is an After Dark cinematic show where the radio host is all sultry and then you call up with stories.
Like if this sexy one time.
Stories. Sexy stories.
This one time I was in a billiard parlor.
I said sexy.
And then, then they have sex on the pool table.
Oh.
Because a saxophone starts playing. Hey, Darren Bousman, how's it going?
It's doing well. How are you?
I'm good. We've officially started the podcast. Jonah's on his way.
Jonah literally just said he's on his way. Well, actually, he just texted me the word on. Could mean anything.
He's on heroin?
Maybe.
There's Jonah yes. Ray!
Hey.
One second ago? Well.
Like, literally just, it haven't even been on a minute.
Still, it started without me, and it makes me feel weird.
Okay, we're going to start the podcast now.
No, that's the most important part. Hi.
How are you?
Jonah, Darren, Jonah.
Jonah, nice what's in the bag?
Stuff that was sent to you guys, but was sent to me.
Oh, Urban Outfitters.
Nope, it's just a bag.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
A bag can be anything that you want it to be.
A bag can be anything you want it to
Thanks,
be.
Thanks, Mr. Imagination.
Yeah.
Did you not get toys as a child?
No, just a bag and then the sticks. Oh, what? Remember sticks?
Jonah, Daddy's high. Here, play with this. Yeah. Play with this activity sack.
You didn't talk to me.
Oh, that's adorable. Darren, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
How's it?
You a fan of the Nerdist Podcast? Welcome.
I am a fan, and it's great to be here.
I've never asked anybody that. It's been a guest.
Wait, what podcast is this?
What's your?
This is You Made It Weird.
What's your favorite episode?
Yeah.
Of all the episodes you've listened to, which I assume are all of them.
I got called out. I cast someone in a movie, and I didn't know who he was before casting him. And it was he was in this last thing I did. He's a member of Slipknot. And So I actually get pulled into the meeting, and this guy's name is Clown. And he goes, he's a big, intimidating dude. And he goes, so you're fans of Slipknot? And I was like, huge fans. And he's like, all right, that's awesome. So what's your favorite song? And I was like, you know, I celebrate your entire collection. Yeah. I tried the big line. And he goes, all right. And he pulls a poster down. We're in a manager's office, and he pulls this like framed picture off the wall and puts it in front of me. If you've ever seen Slipknot, there's like a bunch of guys in it. And they're all wearing masks. He goes, point to me. Which one am I? And I had no clue who he was. And so I just kind of randomly pointed, and he put the thing, and he goes, this meeting's over. And he walked out of the thing, jokingly, just screwing with me. But it was pretty intimidating.
Oh, this whole time, I thought he was serious. I'm like, wow, Slipknot.
I'm hoping he was
it's
serious.
It's kind of ballsy. It's kind of badass, actually, to do that.
If you're not in Slipknot.
Here's the thing.
Give me any band and say point to the bass player, and I'll be like, oh.
Yeah. No, you just point to the ugliest one.
When you're Matt, Jonah, or I, for some reason, we have that kind of energy where if we tried to pull that, people would be like, I am never going to work with that piece of shit again. I could never pull that
point
off.
Point to which one is me. I'm sorry. Never mind. Well, need something.
I saw myself babbling like an idiot trying to backtrack when I realized he really was thick. They were all laughing at me. The man, everyone was laughing at me. And I was seriously like sweating, like palms are sweating. I was bubbling like an idiot. It was really terrible.
So we were talking before you got on. You got a new puppy.
Yes. Aww, what kind? This sounds like really, I think I'm going to lose all horror cred when I talk about this, but it's a golden doodle, which is a cross between a poodle and golden retriever.
What? Can you pull
it up? Joe immediately wants a picture.
Ironic, you ask. I have an entire photo album prepared.
I'm sure.
So we took the dog out to Ojai this weekend. We have two dogs, and we took him out. It was the first time the dog was actually allowed out of the house due to its parvo shots. So you can scroll right there.
Now, when your dog gets parvo shots, does it have like a vice helmet on it?
And it's no,
buddy.
No.
Oh,
right,
buddy. Look at that.
I know, right?
Oh man, it must suck to follow you on Instagram.
Sorry for those that are listening, cannot see the adorableness that is my dog.
This is. I'm not gonna like flip into.
No,
some,
there's no nudes in there.
Okay, that's always the. You ever have
just
that
the
one?
Dog.
Someone's looking through your pictures and you're like, whoa, not that one.
Well, it was embarrassing. I was trying to show someone a trailer and I was in a meeting and I opened up my laptop and there's always that moment of like, what was the last thing I was looking at?
Yeah,
I was safe. I opened it up, but I did start to type in YouTube and YouPorn.
YouPorn,
popped up.
Yep. Sure.
I go to YouPorn a lot more than YouTube. So
you know, just to see if they switched to HTML5, would it play on your iPad?
Mm-hmm. It does.
I hope you've flicked the picture and then there's a picture of the dog holding its vagina open. It's like. Still be adorable.
Somehow its paws are spreading it.
Yep.
That's great. Congratulations.
Just gingerly spreading the doggy sniz.
Okay,
how about that Ojai, though? Isn't that a great place?
It was great. It was the first time I'd been there.
Yeah, so, I just went for the first time recently. I was like, this is so close.
I didn't realize how close it was, too. I mean, that was the thing. It was like an hour and 10 minutes.
You always hear people going, oh, we're going to Ojai. And you're like, oh, that's like probably 3 hours away.
There's
up
so many
the coast.
Good things an hour and 10 minutes away from LA.
Yeah.
White people talking white things.
Yeah. Is an hour and 10 minutes away.
Yeah.
Going to Santa Monica is an
hour and 10 minutes.
I found out, hour and a half
from the
today.
The valley to Santa Monica.
When I start talking about Santa Monica, I'm reminded of Blaine Capatch's throwaway. When he starts making references to the city he's in on stage, local references get you local work. Darren, thank you for Saw. I fucking I saw. First of all, Carrie Elwes. Is it Elwes?
Elwes?
Elwes.
Elwes?
Yeah. Elwes.
Yeah.
I always said Elwes. Like, I always kind of fudged the last part of it, not really know Elwes.
Yeah.
And then it just trailed off.
And Ewan McGregor.
Ewan McGregor.
Yeah. It was crazy. It was, I'd been out in LA just like 4 years. I'd been fired off every job I'd ever had. I worked on X-Files. I was fired from it. I worked on, Van Wilder. I was Tara Reid's assistant. Fired.
What did you do on X-Files?
I was a PA.
Oh, you were a PA.
I was a PA, yeah. And so, like, I was literally going from one PA job to the next.
Did Tara Reid ever read for Saw?
She did not read for Saw.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been kind of epic, actually, thinking back on it.
You could have hired her and then fired her day one.
I remember the day that I this is like something you think is a cliche, but I was really told this. I was on the set of Van Wilder, and I'd been fired off the three movies before that, and they knew that when they hired me. Like, I'd begged my way to get in there. And they fired me, and it was like, I guess Tara didn't like my attitude or something. And I actually was told the line, this is your fourth time you're being fired off a major thing. You will never work in Hollywood again. And I literally went home and cried myself to sleep in a vodka-induced slumber. And I just got really angry, and I wrote like the most angry, bitter script that I could write. At the time, it was called The Desperate, which was about me being desperate in life. And I literally tried to make the most offensive thing I could possibly write in the horror genre. And we sent it out. Everyone rejected it. They were like, this is terrible. This is ridiculous.
You will really never work in this business again.
Now it's really over.
That's five, Darren.
Yeah. So I made a fake management company. I made a fake phone number and had a friend record the thing. And I used my friends and agencies to literally create fake buzz on this script that I wrote. And next thing I knew, I got a phone call from Twisted Pictures saying we want to turn this script into Saw 2. And then it kept me into Saw 2, 3, and 4. Never directed anything before that, really. And I really kind of bullshitted my way into that first meeting, and the rest continued to happen after that. So it was kind of crazy.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard with horror movies to surprise people. Yeah. And the Saw movies really were that when you're first like, oh, you really kind of have, you know, every once in a while, like one comes along where you're like, no, but this really does kind of, because it's so hard to find twists within that genre.
Yeah. And it came out during, I think, like towards the end of the teen
Well, it did. You know what actually started like that kind of hardcore whatever was House of a Thousand Corpses. I think that was like one of the first, like it started to get really raw back then. And like the zombie brought it back to being like crazy and hardcore.
Which was so funny because, you know, when he was making that movie, I remember when we were making the movie, Universal was really high on it. They doubled it. You know, like we, you know, they didn't give him a lot of money to make it the first time. We shot one ending. And then he was like, well, they like the movie. They're doubling our budget just so we can reshoot the last like 15 minutes. And so we went in and it got way more like the original ending of ending of House of a Thousand Corpses. You know, like my character just gets basically torn apart in a cave. Like that was a cheap. And then so all the money, it didn't look like the rest of the movie, like these elaborate bone walls fucking the Dr. Satan lair. And there wasn't, I'm not even sure there was much of a Dr. Satan in the first version. And then all this, you know, and then I think that was right around the time the Columbine shooting happened.
Yeah.
And so all of Hollywood was like, films are too violent. And so they basically said, we're never going
to
release.
How long was it from when you guys finished it to when actually it was put out by Lionsgate?
I started talking to Rob, and it was like 99. Rob said, I think I'm going to write a movie and you should be in it. And we shot it in 2000 and it didn't come out till 2003. Because it got trapped at Universal for a while. They weren't going to do anything with it. And then finally he wrestled it away through Lionsgate and they released it in 2003.
Because I think that was the thing. It was like 2003 and then I think Saw 1 came out in 2004 or 5 and then mine was 6, 7, and 8 after that. And then they kind of died off like 2 or 3 years after that, after like the last Hostel 2, that kind of torture, really violent, vicious movies.
Well, they gave it the term, what is it, torture porn?
Torture porn, yeah. Which I still don't get, but
way to go, Eli Roth. Yeah.
I
was gonna say what I liked about that time though is that like, you know, and what I liked about what Eli Roth did in Hostel Wars, it started off like being like this clean kind of like, this is just a bunch of fucking
college road trip, and then
these gorgeous people are gonna, and then like how fucking just the turn happens, and that's what I also liked about Saw. Just so I was like, oh, this is just fucking gross. This reminds me of the stuff I grew up watching, where just blood.
So I'm an idiot. You didn't come in until part two.
Saw 2, 3, and 4 were the ones that I did, but I was actually hired on Saw 1. It was crazy. So when they bought my script, it was going to be its own movie, The Desperate. They were actually going to make it as The Desperate. And they just completed photography on Saw 1. It was at Sundance. It would not come out yet. And then they said, you know, we think this is going to be something. We want to turn this into Saw 2. So I was on Saw 2 before Saw was ever out there. And then I remember getting the phone call the day Saw opened, and I realized how big it was. I don't think anyone expected that. And they've attached me to the sequel, and it blew up. And so all of a sudden, like, I really hit the money trail on that, because, like, here I was going to be directing some probably straight-to-video movie. And I get the phone call that Saw 1 opens huge, and I'm for, like, 2 months, I'm freaking out. They're going to fire me. Like, they're going to fire me, and they're going to bring in some big-ass director. Eli's going to come in, or Rob Zombie's going to come in and and do this. But they let me stay on. And so, but I know Carrie, though, from... You know, the Saul family is this very kind of tight family, and it's crazy. We keep using the same actors. They are coming back. So it was insane how quickly everything happened. I mean, it literally, I went from being penniless, the classic cliche of thinking I was going to move back to Kansas, where I was from, and go back to farming or something. And then that phone call came in, and it literally within like a week's period of time, from having $0 in my bank account, I didn't really make much on Saul 2, pretty much zero as well, but... going from doing nothing and getting fired to being in Toronto filming the movie.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, it was pretty crazy.
That's awesome.
Is there, I think one of the big challenges with a movie like Saw is that there's the sort of fun part. It's like, you know, what kind of Rube Goldberg killing machines can we make? There's a bit to it that's kind of science-y.
Yeah.
And also this sort of social experiment of like, I'm going to test these people, you know, like that's all fun. The mythos of it.
It was crazy when we were making, from Saw 2 on, I don't know about Saw 1, but from Saw 2 on, one of the, we had a checklist on the traps and they all had to work. That was one of the things we made for ourselves, that they actually had to work the way we depict them in the movie. And so literally everything in Saw 2, 3, and 4 really works the way you see it. So if a guy's arm's twisting, the machine really works the way you see it does, like everything. And so one of the things was you had to be able to build it from Home Depot. Like you had to be able to go to Home Depot and buy everything that you see there in it. And it was crazy because I think it was Saw, and this is horrible that I mixed the Saw movies up. It's been, my mind is, I guess, too much pot or something, but
or money.
That's not it.
Rolling the pot in money.
I smoke money.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what I do now.
That's the best.
But one of them, I think it was Saw 3, there's a character who twists to death. His trap is he's attached to a machine, and the machine turns one clock rotation, and it twists him off. And I remember that when we did that, the stuntman gets in it, and it literally was doing that, and we had to quickly pull it from the car. We had to attach like a car battery because it was really doing that, and it really would have worked that way. So there was some close calls.
You can't buy publicity like that.
Whoops. The worst one was in Saw 2, there was a scene where we throw Shawnee Smith into a pit of hypodermic needles.
Yes.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So that one was horrific because literally when we came up with the idea, we were going to just put a bunch of needles and throw in our bathtub. We're like, that's not visual enough. Let's make a pit. So we had 1,000 needles, and 1,000 needles doesn't cover a quarter of the bottom. So it ended up that we ended up having to hire 5 or 6 people for weeks, literally taking off the top of the needle and putting in a fiber optic thing and throwing it in there. So we're getting ready to shoot the scene. Maybe 20, 30,000 needles are in there. And the prop people accidentally kicked in a thing of real needles.
Oh,
something like
fuck.
Six real needles. We had to stop production and pull out. And talking about finding a needle in a haystack, we literally had to find the 6 normal needles in these 20 to 30,000 fiber optic needles. So there was some scary stuff.
I'm sure you had fudged it a bit, though. Oh, right? Yeah, oh, here it is.
Yeah, I mean, how much damage could 6 needles really do?
Well,
it'd be fine.
You jump on it and lands and gets like just a little oxygen in your blood and die.
But the challenge, the challenge with a franchise like Saw versus, like a typical horror movie is that there always has to be some sort of a reveal that you don't see coming.
It's a magic trick, and that's what's hard, and that's why I eventually had to leave on Saw 4. It became to the point that it hurts. It hurts to think about because it's like a magic trick. You're trying to trick the audience. You're showing them something over here, and in the meantime, you're trying to pull something on them. And it got to a point that by Saw 3 and 4, fans were coming in trying to guess the trick. And
not paying attention to the movie.
Yeah, they weren't paying attention. And then
you hear that, M. Night Shyamalan?
you would start seeing message boards light up of people guessing the end of the movie. And it became so, as a director, I'm a masochist. I would always read the message boards.
Oh,
and I'd be like, dude, this guy got it. The guy got it. He's just spoiling the movie right there. And it got so aggravating.
I don't, it's like, I love the twist that happened in the Saw movies. But my favorite part was the... because a lot of the situations in the Saw movies were like the dream situations in like Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Like it was just, but it was like, because it wasn't a dream, because it was real is what made those so, I loved them so much. Because they were just as crazy as something Freddy would do. Like, I remember the, was it part 6?
I don't remember any of them. So just
oh, yeah. But like,
I
he has, the I guy needs an ear.
Dream Warriors is the best.
Yeah. Dream Warriors is 4. Dream Child 5, probably the worst one. Right. I think this is 6. Where the kid like
then
has
new
a hearing aid.
Oh, no, you're talking about. I thought you were talking about the Saw movies. I don't remember those. You're talking about Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry,
those
like,
remember.
Yeah, those movies I know.
Like he puts a hearing aid in.
Yeah,
and then like and it turns into like a bug and it amplifies everything. Yeah.
I just love that that part where I think it's in Dream Warriors where Jennifer Rubin's a recovering heroin addict and then she just gets those tiny mouths on her arms and then he just fucking sticks it, the glove turns into needles. That's 3?
Wait, that's Dream Warriors. Three
is Dream Warriors.
Three
is Dream Warriors.
Yeah. They jumped the shark and they came back on, I think it was the one where Wes Craven came back and everyone played
New Nightmare.
Yeah, I was a fan of that.
I love that too.
I love that.
Yeah, it's like it really scared me.
Sorry to
really
say this, but I didn't love the Jackie Earle Haley one because I think you have to. Freddy has to be. I think they were
it
like.
He has to be a likable child rape murderer.
Well, he just.
That's
he,
the problem he with
just,
Freddy.
He just has to be a little cheeky and cheesy and not like, I'm a serious,
Yeah.
And Jackie Earle Haley, who was definitely one of the best actors working today, was still just a weird. I think when everyone heard he was going to be Freddy, it was like, okay, I can see that.
I was excited, you're right. There is a bit of, but that's the.
It should have been his character in Dark Shadows that
played.
Those
are the hardest movies to remake because there's such nostalgia growing up watching those movies. I've done a remake. I originally said I was never going to do a remake, and then it got to the point the only way I'll do a remake is if it wasn't popular, like if it was not a hugely, like I did a movie called Mother's Day, which with Rebecca De Mornay.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that was a trauma film, and it's a fun trauma film, but it's not a movie that you're going to get killed or raped over if you fuck up Fred. I mean, Freddy is something we've grown up with. We've lived with this dude. And then to see Jack here, and by the way, I saw Dark Shadows last night. That's I don't know what happened. It was cool, and then I fell asleep like an hour in.
Well, it beat the original Dark Shadows by being cool at first.
Yeah.
Because they had, when I was a kid at this video store in Wakefield, there was a wall of Dark Shadows because they had released the soap opera on volumes. There was 78 volumes of videotapes.
But that's the thing. It's not only a remake. It's like a movie version of a show.
It's a reimagining. You know? Yeah.
But it's the Brady Bunch, you know, thing of
Brady Bunch worked.
Wait, was the original? Because I own the DVD box set of Dark Shadows, but I've never watched it. Is it as cheeky and like
No.
It was like a 70s soap opera, but he just happened to be
General Hospital, but
he was a vampire. Like the pitch was soap. I'm sure the pitch was like soap operas are popular. Dracula is popular. Let's do soap opera Dracula. Yeah.
Less. I don't know if Dracula's still popular.
Lou, I'm going to prove it. And it's Les and Lou in their gold jackets sharing the same cigar.
Of course.
And then backing into each other like the end of Requiem for a Dream. I'm sorry. I took this in a weird direction.
Yeah.
But Dark Shadows is originally, I mean, it'd be like if someone made, you know, General Hospital, but then like a super cheeky version. Yeah.
Oh, like
I think
True
General
Blood.
General Hospital is the super cheeky version of General Hospital.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. I guess that's true.
No, Charles. Poor Charles is.
No, what was the really spin-off. Magical, the one with the dwarf and the lady who was a witch? It was a soap opera.
That was on NBC.
Oh, you're talking about, motherfucking, the soap opera.
Yeah.
Yes, and there was the...
Something's...
It was
recently.
Like 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
I remember it was a big deal when the guy died. The little.
Are you talking about the fantasy? Not fantasy.
God damn it! Everyone's yelling at their
fucking.
No, I know what you're talking about now.
As if anyone's still listening to this on an iPod.
It's
right, guys?
Somethings. It's like a word, and it's a pluralized, I think.
Yeah, and there was a witch lady who had the little
and then there's like, and then there's like long storylines that have nothing to do with the witch lady.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, I just put in soap opera, and I started to write witch.
I just put witch lady soap opera.
And then I got soap opera with midget. Sorry for using that word. That's Google.
Sure.
And that's, and so it's passions.
Passions!
Passions. Oh, my God. I feel like I just got a piece of food out of my teeth.
Yeah.
I was like, I almost got it. I almost got it.
In the past, it would have just been like, oh, man, did anyone ever figure out what that thing was?
No, and we never talked
about it. We just talk about it every night at the bar.
I feel like you and I are going to the library.
Yeah.
But then you also made Repo.
Genetic
Opera as well.
Yeah, it's crazy. When I came out here, I was a huge fan of Rocky Horror, and I loved like those kind of crazy, culty rock operas. And that's a hard thing to get off the ground. I mean, it's one thing when you go and say, I want to direct a horror film. That's easy. Horror films are quantifiable. You can show a formula how they're going to make money. But you walk in and say, I want to make a rock opera. And, oh, by the way, Paris Hilton's in it and whatever. it was funny because when I went in to pitch it, after Saw 2 came out, I went into Lionsgate and they said, anything you want to make. What is it you want to do? And Saw 2 was extremely popular, so I really had a blank slate. I said, I want to make a rock opera. And they said, absolutely not. You're doing Saw 3.
We said anything you want.
So Saw 3 comes out. It opened very profitable. And they said, okay, Darren, now we're serious. Whatever you want to make. And I said, Repo the Genetic Opera. And they said, absolutely not Saw 4. And so finally, I said, we made a deal. I said, oh, you know, let's do Saw 4, but we're making this rock opera. And so they allowed me to do it. It was crazy. It was... it was like a weird mismatch of I want to do a movie that you just kind of scratch your head and say, what the fuck? When you see the poster, you see like Paul Sorvino, Sarah Brightman. And Sarah Brightman is like a world-renowned like opera star. She was married to Andrew Lloyd Webber. She was
Phantom of the Opera.
Phantom of the Opera. She is the world. And so you have a song between Sarah Brightman and Paris Hilton. That should never happen. That is something that should never happen. And that's what made it cool. We ended up getting a bunch of genre actors. Bill Moseley was in it.
Oh, yeah, Moseley.
Ogre from Skinny Puppy.
Chopped up.
Anthony Stewart Head from Buffy. It was a crazy cast, and it failed miserably when we tested the movie. And in testing, it was horrible. We had to test the movie in Chatsworth, and there were no visual effects done, and there was no music.
Well, first of all, you had to go to Chatsworth.
Well, that already started off bad. But if you've ever tested a movie, I mean, you know that like that one audience dictates everything and like what they're going to score you at. And so here I had a rock opera, and it had 56 songs. There was no talking. It was only singing. And we had to test it without the music in it. So they're like, you're testing the movie.
I'm
like, but there's no music in it yet. And they're like, it's fine. And so we had to put scratch tracks. So literally, there's no instrumentation. It's just like click, click, click. And then someone would sing with no instrumentation. And there were no visual effects.
Oh, my God.
It was a visual effect movie. So we tested like one. Like it was terrible. Like, and they recruited the test screening as from the director of Saw 2, 3, and 4, from Bill Moseley of House of 1,000 Corpses and Texas Chainsaw 2, bring you a new experiment in terror. And there's nothing scary about Repo at all. And so we failed miserably. We were basically thrown out in one theater and or two theaters. And I got really angry. And I was like, I went into Lionsgate and I said, guys, I've made you guys a lot of money on the Saw films. Give me the movie back. Let me take the movie back. And they you know, that luckily I had a relationship with them, and they gave me the movie for a month to do what I wanted to with it, where I could like tour it around. And I literally got in a car with the writer. We started going across America and four-walling theaters. And next thing we knew, Lionsgate called us and said, we're getting calls from theaters all across America wanting this thing, because it became like a midnight cult thing where people started dressing up.
And that's what you wanted.
It is.
You kind of had to go through that for that to happen.
No, it was amazing. And you know what? If I could do it again, it's the absolute best thing, because if it went out in 3,000 screens, it would have gotten Razzies. It would have won. It would have failed miserably. People would have laughed at it. But because it came underground and culty, people had to seek it out. They had to try to find it. And it became this thing that you went to at midnight on Friday and Saturday nights. People got drunk. They dressed up.
But by that time, the mythos of the film has had some time to percolate. And yeah. People aren't going thinking they're seeing a horror film. And
no,
they're like,
exactly.
Wait, what is that? You know, like it's that gap between their expectation and what it is.
Yeah. Or a musical version of the movie Repo Man, which yeah. I thought it was for a second when I first saw the poster.
That's a whole other story. That's a crazy story. I'll get into that in a second. When we made Repo, we were finishing it, and Repo Men was calling our crew, trying to offer our crew money to come on their thing. It was just weird. We had the same soundstage. We were on the same soundstage. And our Repo at the Genetic Opera is based on a stage play that I directed in 2001. It was before that. It was actually made, I think, in 1999. Two dudes, a guy named Darren Smith and Terrence Adunich, did it they did it in coffee houses, and it was a 10-minute opera about a guy who repossessed organs. And so from 1999 till about 2002, 2003, they did it in coffee houses. And then I was the first thing I ever directed. When I got to LA, I directed the stage show of it. And so, you know, I did that in 2003, I believe it was. And then it went off and did a couple other showings, including Off Broadway. It's a theatrical stage show. So, you know, we were doing this for 10 years. And then all of a sudden I find out, we thought it was awesome. Like, oh, we're doing organ repossession. No one's done this. And then we find out, hey, sharing your soundstage right there is another movie called Repo Men about organ repossession in the future and buying and selling on credit. It was a crazy thing.
Yeah.
How many repo-based things are ever going to get made?
That's the thing is, like, you hear like
Repo
like,
Man, Repo Man, Repo the Genetic Opera. That's it.
That's it. There's going to be, that's it. That's yeah. We've run the gamut on the repo stuff. But it was crazy because that led me now, I think, to my most, that made me a filmmaker, I think, Repo. I learned a lot during the Salt Films, but to me, what I've done, we just finished a movie, comes on DVD October 23rd, called The Devil's Carnival, which is what I'm the most excited about. It's after Repo, I had such an amazing experience because unlike Saw, where on Saw, I get a itinerary from Lionsgate, and it says, here's our press day, here's the screening, and that's it. And that literally what I would do. I'd show up the press day, you do junkets, and you sit around tables. And you drive down Sunset Boulevard and you see posters saying, hey, come see Saw. It's in the theaters October, whatever. With Repo, there were no posters. There was nothing. There was no PR team. It was us. And so what we did is we turned to the fans. And I literally turned to my fans and I said, guys, help us. We have no publicity. Come see this thing. And we empowered the fans. Next thing we knew, the fans took it over like Rocky. And they started, you know, they started flyering their cities. They started making bumper stickers and putting it on things. And I saw how this community basically embraced this movie that was like the bastard child. So, after I finished my last film I just did, I said, I want to make another rock opera, but I want to own it and control it completely. I'm not going through the studio system. So we raised financing completely independently around the studios. We cast it completely independently, didn't go through any casting directors. I just called people I knew. And we went off and shot it, and we made this 60-minute weird hybrid short film where we then toured it for the last 60. I've been on the road for the last 60-some days. We four-walled 60 cities. And we turned it into like a traveling sideshow. We brought carnies with us, literally. We brought opening acts, burlesque dancers, fire eaters, glass eaters, contortionists, and we had like live elements. So when you show up to the theater,
the whole thing.
You had like an opening act. You had an MC, like a carny barker,
like a Jim Rose traveling circus.
It was exactly what it was. And we did this all across America, and every night was different. Every night we had someone new. We had like X-rated clowns, and it was a very adult-oriented.
What is an X-rated clown?
Well,
you know what? I think I can fill in the blank.
You know, actually, it's not as cool as you think it is.
This is pulling like a bunch of scarves out of a vagina.
Yeah, it's not.
They toured the R-rated hypnotist.
So we did this all across America, and then the same thing. We decided, screw it. We did this. Let's distribute it ourselves, which I've never in a million years thought about doing. And it's amazing because I now, for the first time ever, have more control as a filmmaker and artist, that I control the box art, I control the trailers, I control where it goes and how it's seen. And it made this kind of like really crazy outside of the studio system thing, and it's been the most rewarding, cool thing that I think I've done. And it's, I think a lot of filmmakers are scared to try that kind of thing. They're scared to step outside of the system. But the minute you do it and you actually see that you can be successful doing it, it's only a matter of time before people start doing it.
Well, so you think that's the main reason that people are just afraid? Like, why don't more people? I mean, you had a bit of a resume going into this.
That's the thing. I was at an advantage because I had done the Saw films. I had a fan base. But I think it's scary because it's a lot of work, a lot of bullshit work you don't want to do. Like, an example, we're distributing the DVDs ourselves. Now, that doesn't sound hard until you actually break it down what that means. Like, I have to now deal with SAG residuals and DGA residuals and ASCAP residuals and dealing contracts and E&O insurance, stuff that as a filmmaker I've never had to do before. So the mountains of paperwork, but what's great about it is when the whole thing's said and done, I'm not giving a distributor 25 or 30% for literally just putting a box out somewhere. Like, I'm putting the box out and I'm taking back that 25 and 30%. What also cool is there's been movies that I've done recently that I look at the trailer when it's out there and I want to throw up. I'm like, who put that trailer out there? That's horrible. That's not what the movie is. And as a filmmaker, you can't do anything. Like, you're kind of, you finish a movie and you turn it in and you're like, hopefully it gets released. I mean, something like House of a Thousand Corpses is held for years. And you guys as the filmmakers and actors, you can't do anything. You're sitting there waiting for this fucking movie to come out and years pass and you can't do anything. Same thing with Mother's Day. I did Mother's Day. I turned it in and it was 3 years. 3 years from the day I turned it in till it was ever released in theaters. And it sucks because, like, you know, your friends, other genre people, they're like, hey, what's up with Mother's Day? Oh, it's coming out. And you wait a year. What's up with Mother's Day? Oh, it's coming out. And then finally on the third year, they're like, hey, I downloaded your movie on a torrent site because it's not out yet. And then finally 3 years later, it comes out. And it's just like, that sucks. So this, what's cool about this in Devil's Carnival is since we control everything, we control how it gets out and how quickly it gets out. And there's none of that, like, politics of having to wait years to do it. So it's been an exhilarating experience.
Well, you know, and so much of those systems, it's there's this kind of weird level of, I figured out, and I apologize if this is anyone's position who is in the podcast, because I don't fully blame them, but there's this area, there's this level of middle management that is just like a fucking roadblock.
Oh yeah.
For everything that makes it impossible to get anything done. They're always the first line of defense to tell you no about something. And if you can get past them somehow, usually the person who's really in charge will be like, oh yeah, that's fine.
That's exactly, there's an entire group of people when you're making a movie that are there just to say, go fuck yourself. They'll say no to you. And sometimes that people that don't take pride in what they do, and I don't care what it is, be it a janitor or a producer that's financing a movie, you got to like what you're doing. And I think a lot of these people are bitter or angry because they either want to be artists, they want to make movies, they want to be actors. And so they watch you doing it and you just get attitude. And it got to a point that I just got so fed up with just being told no. I'd being told what's commercial and what's not commercial. I make weird rock operas. They're not for everybody. They're not. I understand that 75, maybe 85% of the population will hate them. But that doesn't mean that 15 to 25% are not going to support them and spend lots of money to see them. And I think that, to me, I've always been more attracted to that kind of fringe, outside of the box thing. And it's been insane because I went from Saw, which is a hugely successful commercial horror film, to making weird rock opera starring Paris Hilton and Paul Sorvino, which, what the fuck is that? But I love that. I love being able to bounce between the two. This week, I have a movie opening with Stephen Moyer from True Blood. So I'm getting to play both sides of the fence here, getting to do my own indie crazy stuff, and then still getting to do movies like that with Stephen Moyer. So it's been crazy.
I still think you've got to call Tara Reid in for something.
Oh my God, that was
especially now. I mean, she's a mess.
She's kicking a dog while it's down.
It is. That was an insane thing on Van Wilder. Ryan Reynolds was one of the nicest dudes at that time because I'm on PA and I'm so excited to be on set, and he's so nice and like just you know, very engaging. And then I'm basically Tara Reid's assistant, and my job consisted at the time of either holding her cigarette or a Diet Coke can. Or like, and it was just insane. Like,
sometimes both.
Sometimes this, yes. But she never knew my name, and it was Daryl, Devin, Derek, and it just got to a point that I was just like, my name is Darren. Look at me, say it. And that's why I was fired. Like, my name is Darren. So, and I'm sure she would have no recollection. And I've been at parties where I've seen her, and I so much wanted to go up and say something to her, but I don't even know how to start that conversation. Like,
you just go up and go, what's my name?
Yeah, exactly. Do you remember my name? Say it.
Say my name.
You hold the cigarette and Diet Coke. You're like,
say, bring back memories. It was also weird because I think there was the time that her and Carson Daly were dating, and so yeah. I was always in here with that. So there was all kinds of drama on that.
Such an interesting couple, because, you know, Carson is such a nice, I mean, I don't know Tara Reid at all. She might be, you know, there are some people in the business.
You couldn't even finish that sentence.
I know, shut up, man. there are some people, you just never know what people are really like until you work for them or are in a relationship with them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, maybe she's the nicest person in the world, other people, but I don't know. But Carson, super, super sweet guy. And I was always like, what an interesting couple, the two of them. I don't know.
It would be interesting for me to go back and talk to her now that all this time has passed. Was she really the big bitch that I thought she was, or was it me again being that angry bitter? I was telling angry bitter people. I was that angry bitter person when I was a PA.
Maybe a little from both columns.
Yeah, a little.
I mean, like, it just you might have activated more of that because you didn't want to take her shit. But if you had took her shit, you might not have had the gumption to be like, well, fuck, I'm just gonna write my own thing. You know what I mean? Like, there's a certain thing that my manager Alex says. He calls it the fire in the belly. So when you get really hard on yourself, or when you get crazy, he was like, it's okay, you got the fire in the belly. Just make sure you're aiming it in the right. Just make sure you're using it the right way.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the times that I was fired, though, I completely deserved it. Like on on X-Files, this is one of my favorite ones, and by favorite, I mean it's terrible and it's embarrassing, but as a PA, one of your jobs is locking down a set, and that's your job is to make sure that no one's making noise, you're not having someone wander in the middle of a frame. And it was the last season of X-Files when it was Robert Patrick, so it was Julian and Robert, and we were down under some underground thing, and there was like a tunnel, and my job was the first line of defense that no one stumbled in front of the camera, and it was a long night, and I decided it'd be better to fall asleep, and I took a nap, like literally on a cot, and a homeless dude in his shopping cart went right through the frame, right through the middle of the shot, and Robert Patrick screamed, "Who's locking down the set? Who's locking down the set?" And everyone points to me, and I'm like asleep in the corner of the place, sleeping on a pillow. And that was I deserve to be fired on that one. That was
amazing.
Maybe the homeless man was an alien. The truth is out there.
Yeah, it really is out there.
Some of the T-1000 yelling at him. So I mean, come on.
And then he shot Robert Patrick, and then his head just reformed around the.
I just watched X-Files 2, the movie recently.
Yeah,
again.
The standalone movie.
What happened? Like, it seemed like that was like a weird.
That was a Monster of the Week movie. That wasn't really. Continuation.
It wasn't a bad thing. I just, after X-Files won the movie, and then I don't know.
Listen. Well, then waiting, what, 6-7 years?
Yeah.
I was just on a...
14.
David Duchovny was it 14?
98.
Oh, yeah. David Duchovny was just on a plane, and I was coming back from New York, and
End of story.
He was on the plane.
David Duchovny was on a plane.
Yep. Thanks, guys. Dream for real. But he... You know, I mean, obviously David Duchovny, I've always, of course he's a big, but fucking everyone who got on the plane could not take their eyes off that guy
as they were.
He seemed perfectly nice too. I didn't talk to him, but he was very polite to the staff and he seemed really cool. He does. He really has a thing, but still, like, you know, after all these years, he just has this fucking thing.
Is Californication still on TV?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it is.
I haven't seen
it. Coming back very soon, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I like Californication. Do you watch it, Jonah?
I've only seen clips.
I watched the first couple seasons, and then I think I just got to a certain point where I was like, it's funny, it's cool, I like all the actors on it,
Naked.
But I feel like I know what's going to happen in most of the episodes.
We did a movie that was very similar to that, where he was like a writer
Red Shoe Diaries.
No. He was just reading people's fantasies. He was like a guy that wrote a book but was teaching at a college and having sex with a bunch of students.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, it was a very similar movie.
When did TV replace, for me at least, TV recently has replaced going to the movies. There's so many amazing TV shows. I can't even leave my house now. Like,
It's hard to keep up.
No, it really has.
It happened in 1999 with The Sopranos.
It started. Well, you could go farther back and say it started with Dream On.
Dream On.
That's exactly where I was going.
It was a half hour.
What's the guy?
Brian Benben.
Yeah. His best friend works out at my gym, and I always want to go over and say something to him.
His best friend?
Yeah. No, but between Breaking Bad and Boardwalk Empire and Homeland and all these...
I like Dexter, too.
Oh, Dexter, yeah. Oh, my God.
You got your Mad Men, you got your Walking Dead, you got your fucking...
I'm sorry, what was that last one? I don't...
Zombies take over the...
Oh, you mean the pre-show for Talking Dead?
Yes. Well, we were already doing Talking Dead, and then they were like, we should probably build a show that exists. Yeah. I just thought it'd be funny to do a show about a fake zombie show, and they're like, and then Robert Kirkman was like, yeah, I think maybe I should write a show around this.
I just don't have an hour of time to watch the show. That's why I just get the beat.
The cliff notes.
What does Aisha Tyler think about this episode? And they tell me.
I fucking love it. We're coming back. I'm so excited about that show. I fucking love that show so much. Do you read the comics? Do you read the Walking Dead comics?
I do. I have the first two big volumes.
The compendium?
Then it would kind of... that's such a time commitment. I try to read every comic, but those... it was crazy because I didn't read the classics. I had my first comic book series published, and I was so excited. And like, I started doing interviews, and people would ask me about comics, and I'd be like, "Dude, I got to read these." So I went back and got like Watchmen and From Hell and The Walking Dead and all this. Next thing I knew, like, I didn't realize how dense they were. Like, From Hell took me like weeks and weeks to get through, and then Watchmen. Like, I thought that was going to be an easy book, and then I realized, next thing I know, I'm a month and a half in. Now I'm doing Sandman.
Yeah,
so I'm going back and forth between Sandman and Walking Dead right now. So yeah.
Well, I just I was three issues behind. And something, I'm not going to give any big spoilers away, but something happens in issue 100 that is so fucking disturbing that it's just the did you read it yet?
No, not yet.
I'm waiting
for the trade.
Just the sort of the gunk of what happened just sat with me.
Yeah.
For so wait,
how many how many issues are there right now?
102.
So they're on 102.
Yeah.
All right. I have those big, I don't even know what they're called.
Compendium?
Yeah.
Well, there's different like levels of collections.
There's like the trade paperback, and then there's the compendium, then there's like the massive ones.
No, because there's a one in between there that has like about three.
Yeah.
Mine is like, it's like, I want to say it's like 200 pages. I mean, it's big, and I have two volumes of them.
That must
big.
Be the compendium.
Yeah,
then.
That's the compendium.
Yeah, because right. There's also the hardcover ones that like have like three or four issues in them.
What's your favorite comic series? Would it be Walking Dead? Comic book?
I'm not as much of a comic nerd as
dummy.
So, I mean, you know, I've been reading a lot of comics lately, yeah. But not, I mean, yeah. I couldn't go. I mean, I have a list of ones that I want to read.
Yeah.
But you know, I enjoyed that. We talked about the new 52.
Yeah. No, I'm a big Batman guy. I just reread Hush, which is that big run that Jim Lee did and Jeff Loeb, with like every Batman villain, Superman's.
I got to get through Lock and Key.
Yeah, it's fucking great. Hush.
Nice.
Have you read like Black Hole or?
Is that the one with the S? What's Black Hole about?
It's Charles Burns, I think, and it's just these kids. It's in the '70s, and they kind of hang out in the forest, and they start getting these like weird
STD?
Mutations.
That's like the STD thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's a gorgeous book. It's just a neat story. And then the one, but I think I don't really read series of comics. Like I love like the graphic novel, like the one-off kind of things. Like Asterios Polyp is probably one of my favorite things ever. It's just, it's gorgeous to look at, and it's just the story is really like heart-wrenching.
I shameless plug. I have a comic book series called Abattoir, which I'm really excited. It was released last year through Radical, but it's talk about dark and macabre. It's pretty cool. It's only a 6-issue set, but it's a about a dude opening the gateway of hell, but it's done in a very realistic kind of thing. It's pretty
so it's
cool.
Not like The Gate?
No. It's not
I mean...
The 80s film The Gate?
Yes.
Yeah, that's it. Here, those little dudes that
oh, God,
out,
I love those.
Great.
Yeah.
Here's what I find in The Dog. The Dog in The Gate. Here's what I find happens to me now is that there is... You know, I'm super, super, super busy with work.
Yeah.
And there are so many things to consume on so many different platforms that I find myself like, oh, I'm on Comixology. Okay, I'm trying to rifle through to catch up on this. And I'm playing a video game on my other hand. And then my girlfriend's playing like Borderlands so I can kind of see, you know, like, but then there are shows that are on the DVR and then I got to get them on the iPad. So like, there's so much to consume.
What happened 10 years? If you go back when I was in college, I was just thinking about this. When I was in, I think my sophomore year in college, I got my first computer and I was so excited. Like not, I'd had a computer, but I'm talking like it was like a real laptop that I can check email on daily. Before that, like I would check email every other day or so. It was not like it is now. I mean, within like a 12-year period of time, I can't leave. I mean, look at this. I'm sitting here with an iPad and myself.
Every 3 or 4 days.
Yeah, I would check about once a week. I didn't have it. I would go to my friend's house and check my email.
I mean, it was pretty intense until, you know, it started to get crazy around the Palm era. Like when Palm sort of introduced like, you know, their PDAs and like the Trios series, and I was like, oh, I can get email, you know, and then the iPhone revolution is just like.
What did you use right before your iPhone?
Trio 750. I think it was a 750 or 700 or 750. And I thought it was amazing. And then I saw the iPhone and I'm like, why am I holding this brick in my hand? You know, like it just
happens every time a new iPhone comes out.
Ew, you disgust me.
Well, you know, I picked up the 4S the other day. I'm like, wow, this is really heavy.
How
you know,
did I
compared
carry
to the
this
5.
Thing around?
But yeah, it really, you know, it's you, we human beings need to be distracted at all times, and it just the better technology became, the more it fed into that, and it's.
You know, the same reason that people look at elevator numbers when they're in an elevator just to be distracted by something, just constantly, we can't stop.
Yeah. Did you see that documentary? It was out, I think, last year, The Transcendent Man. It was about the singularity theory, about basically, it's, I forget who the guy is.
Kurzweil.
Okay? Yeah. Who technology is going to, Terminator is basically what it comes down to, that he gives it a year, by 2020, technology will surpass our understanding of it. And it basically, that new technology begets new technology. So what we have now was the equivalent on our cell phone, was the equivalent of the MIT computer 5 years ago.
Right.
And so new technology is exponentially. He says by 2020, that technology will surpass our understanding of it, and it will be basically, it turns into Terminator at that point.
Yeah, well, then they'll be able to make themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
And push themselves forward. The AI.
I mean, I always had this idea that maybe the next stage of human evolution was not necessarily a human one, but something that we made that evolves.
Yeah.
And then we just sort of become props or batteries.
Well, that nanotechnology now, it's insane. Like, they were talking about how it's starting to fight cancer, and it's they were showing this whole thing how now we're introducing actual technology into medical and using that to for cancer and for amputees and all of that. At what point is it going to stop? I mean, if you realize that how technology's changed in the last 5 years from the iPhones and just the iPads, what's 5 years from now? It's scary. It's crazy.
Well, I think we're sort of, I think, but what the one thing that you have noticed in the last few years is that, you know, we're sort of maxed out currently on processor speed and flash memory.
Yeah.
Like the last few iterations of the iPhone, like, we're still stuck at 64 gigs. You know, computer processor speeds are still, what are they, like 3.32 gigahertz?
Yeah, those are overclocked.
And so it's like, there was a period of time where it was like, you know, 1 gigahertz, 1.5, 2, 1.5, 3,
thing,
you know.
Is cores.
How many different cores? But
an
in a way,
i7 has seven cores.
I understand, but that's cheating, because you're just daisy chaining a bunch of processors together. And so, you know, there will be some next great leap in computing, whether it's like quantum computing or whether it's some type of
isolinear chips like the Enterprise uses,
or some type of, you know, biometric sort of a, like a biomechanical sort of a thing, or I don't know. Some new thing has to take hold for that next leap.
Look at the Leafs in the Iron Man suits. The Mark 7, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Finds him off a building.
Yeah, right. Come on.
Right?
Jarvis, shoot Matt Myra.
Oh, don't.
But
I think your wife is lovely, Paul Bettany.
What are some of your other favorite rock operas? Not too many to choose from, are there?
Well, no, but I mean, Jesus Christ Superstar and Tommy, I think, are the one. I love those weird movies from the 70s.
Really thought you were going to say Jesus Christ. I can't think of one.
No, Jesus Christ Superstar. No, but if you watch Tommy, I mean, it's just to get that, that what the fuck factor. You have Ann-Margaret covered in beans as she's rallying around on the floor. I mean, it's amazing.
What was that second one from the Rocky Horror guy? Was that Shock Treatment? Yeah, one's...
Not so much.
Not so good, but fucking weird as shit.
That's it. It is.
One that Brian De Palma made?
Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah.
Yes. Phantom of the Paradise, Paul Williams, right? Yeah.
That is that's another great, and what's great about all these, and Phantom of the Paradise included, is that they still have legs today. You'll still find midnight screenings these movies. And it's
Phantom of the Paradise is not only just a fun, weird movie, it's a fucking weird 70s movie, which is extra weird.
Have you heard of The Apple? It's called The Apple. It's one of the weirdest. I think you can find it on Netflix streaming. It's one of the weirdest 70s. I couldn't even begin to tell you what it's about. It didn't catch on, and there's a reason it didn't, but it's still worth a watch. The Apple.
The Apple. What's it about?
I can't tell you. I have no idea. I've seen it 5 or 6 times, and I cannot tell you what it's about. Or another crazy one.
Is it sort of like the Captain Beefheart of movies? Like, what are they doing?
I hate Captain Beefheart.
Yeah, I literally have seen it like 5 or 6 times. One of those movies I show everybody, and no one can figure out what it is. Like, you just kind of walk away and scratch your head.
That's like any Jodorowsky movie.
It is. But another great one is called The First Nudie Musical.
I've seen The First Nudie Musical.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy.
What freaked me out about that movie was Cindy Williams is in that movie.
Well, a lot of people are. Ron Howard's in the movie. He's got a cameo in it. There's so many like weird cameos. It's dancing dildos.
Have you guys ever seen The First Nudie Musical?
No.
So it's like, I think, I don't know, maybe 79, 80. Yeah. It's like right around there. Cindy Williams, who played Shirley in Laverne and Shirley, is in it. And you said Ron Howard.
Yeah.
And basically this guy inherits a movie studio that's failing. And so he decides, because the 70s, this sort of like... The 70s is like the full frontal nudity decade.
Yeah.
And so he decides he's going to make the first nudie musical. And so it's basically it's kind of brilliant. He wants to make a big budget musical porn. And so it's like you see these scenes where they're like, cock inserts, take one. And then people just like dance naked. It's so weird.
It really makes me happy. Like one of the things I love at my house is I always put on weird movies when people come over and I'll turn the sound off and there's just weird shit on in the background.
I do that too.
And Holy Mountain's been on numerous times.
Yeah, El Topo, Holy Mountain. It just makes everyone, what?
What are you watching?
Let My Puppets Come. I would like to throw that into the hat.
What is it?
Let My Puppets Come.
I've never seen that.
It's a puppet porn.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Inflated?
Just changed my life. Are you serious?
Wait, no, I'm serious. Okay, so years ago, I'm at the there's a video store in Brentwood, and they had
Vidiots?
It wasn't a cool one. It was like right near Bundy in Wilshire.
Cinephile.
No. It wasn't a cool movie nerd one. It was just like a video store.
Yeah, yeah.
They were everywhere, you guys.
Yeah.
And then the 99-cent bin on this cover, Let My Puppet, not even the adult
1976,
section.
1976, Let My Puppets Come.
Al Goldstein, I think, was one of the producers. And it's basically puppets fucking each other. And it's so weird. It's so weird.
Dee has this VHS of this thing called Inflated. And it's this guy that just made weird movies out of like inflatable
sex I've seen that
dummies.
Too. Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's
how could I have not heard of either of these movies?
But this is a comedy though. Like Let My Puppets Come is cheeky. It's like there's a puppet. There's like a guy in a puppet in a hospital bed, and this chick comes in and she starts blowing him. And it's puppets, and so you know it's like you kind of get the Pac-Man of their mouth up and down on the shaft, and then he erupts into a volcano of puppet cum, which looks like human cum, I guess, but probably not under a microscope.
Atoms. He directed Deep Throat.
Oh, wow.
Deep Throat is what pops up when you look his name up.
And then she leaves the room and he's like, who was that? And someone goes, that was the head nurse. So it's like it's full of jokey jokes and puppets fucking.
You know, there's that era of like that fucking VHS era that I really love. And there's this guy I follow on Tumblr, Vamos Video. What he does, he lives in Kansas, and he just goes to like video stores that are closing.
You're from Kansas, do you know him?
Yeah. Of course, he lives down the street.
Yeah, that's what the found footage guys do.
Yeah, and they just go to like places, and he just buys all stuff. But like everything is like he has is just like it's amazing. Just he'll scan all the VHS covers he gets, and post like makes gifts. It's amazing.
Really, you know, we really and this generation now is totally we're totally spoiled now because there really was something special about that. Basic hunter-gatherer need to find a dirty or even like remember like the red VHS tapes you're like these are weird or like white ones and you're like this is really special
green one. That was ghost.
Remember the days when you had to sign on to a bulletin board to look at porn the sound of the screeching where I'd like try to hide it from my mother I'd turn the music up like,
and then you're on dial-up so it takes like 15 minutes
just jerking off to a JPEG that's loading
and that was a time where you didn't have dual phone lines in the house so like your mom would pick up the phone and hear you at 2 a.m. in the morning with that screechy thing. Are you looking at porn?
Yeah.
So
must have left it on. Is it showing up?
It's not. It just has inflatable movie screens. I type in inflated movie. So what is this?
Bad
it's
SEO.
It's just this weird thing this guy made. He's just the real weirdo. And it's the most uncomfortable thing to watch. And like one of them he put in blackface. Like and it's just he makes them fuck and he's
like
just,
Len Sella's silly cinemas, but with inflatable fuckboards.
I saw inflatable at the UCB one night. It was a fucked up and remember that fucked up in whatever videos it was Besser and Walsh.
Oh yeah.
Saturday nights at midnight.
Yeah, it was just it's
I gotta track these movies.
It just makes you just one of those things where you're like, this is gonna be funny, and then you watch, you're like, how long has it been on? Just a couple minutes.
I'm pretty sure I still have Let My Puppets Come somewhere.
You can let me know if I can't find it.
It's probably in your storage facility that we should auction.
When Moses was in Egypt land, let my puppets come.
But I do love that thing when people walk in the house. There's just something really uncomfortable on. Have you ever seen Sallow?
Sallow,
yeah. It's Criterion. It's one of the hardest movies to get through. I can handle pretty much anything.
I have the cover in my head.
I can get through pretty much anything, but that's a movie that literally it's so disturbing and disgusting to me that it's the only movie that I've actually had to watch on Fast Forward. It's a beautiful film. I mean, it's basically about fascism and these kids. They use real kids, and they put them through some of the most horrific, horrible things. And the director was killed right after he made it, too.
Whoa.
He was murdered. Track it down. That's a hard one to get.
Yeah,
you know, it's sort of like Larry, like a Larry Clark movie.
No, well, it's beautifully shot. It's and you're just. But the thing that makes it so hard to watch is the kids in it. A lot of times if they're doing kid violence, it's older people playing. They have real kids. And there's like a scene in it where it's literally these fascists that are making kids do horrible things for their own sexual gratification. And there's a scene like where they starve the kids and then they show, it's been forever since I've seen it, but they show a woman putting razor blades and nails into a cat food, and then she makes the kids eat it. And then like there's another scene where they make one of the kids like shit on a floor and the other people have to eat it, but there's no cutting, and it's a hard movie to get through. And I got it for my birthday, and this Criterion, I was like, I've heard about this, and I put it on for everyone to watch, and it killed the mood.
Party over.
I did the same thing. Let My Puppets Come. I brought it to a Doug Benson show at the UCB where we're supposed to bring movies.
I was there.
And you were at that one.
Yeah.
There was a theme around the night, and you're supposed to bring clips, and then just sort of, you know, like
Doug loves interrupting. Wasn't it Love?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like Valentine's Day movie.
And I brought My Puppets Come, thinking, I'm thinking, like, this is the UCB. Puppet, like, the opening scene is a woman who fucks her, is a puppet woman who fucks her puppet dog. And she says, I can't do it with you. You're a dog. And he says, but I've had all my shots. And his puppet lipstick dog cock comes out.
Oh, my God.
And they have sex. And it's just like felt on felt. And it's hilarious. And it just, like, silence. Silence. It was one of the times that it was the time I misjudged the UCB theater the most.
Sorry.
There's always that the thing that makes those kind of things creepier is when you just, that you have that VHS room tone sound when you watch it. Just like it starts to go,
and then you see like the screen like do the tilt, like the tracking. The tracking.
Oh, they didn't do the audio right.
Oh, the tracking. Remember getting up to hit the fucking tracking button to fucking make it.
Some fancy ones had remotes.
On DVD. You have the VHS.
I have the DVD.
So it is on DVD.
Someone put it on DVD.
All right.
It exists somewhere, and I'm pretty sure that I still have it. And if I have it, more than welcome to burn a copy of it.
Do you still have any of your VHS?
You know what? I have a storage unit of about 50 or 100 that I kept just because not because they're good movies, because I love the cover of them.
Yeah.
And that is the same thing. I also have 8 tracks that I kept from my brother and records, but. Only about 50, I would say.
Yeah, I had about 300 at one point, and then I realized I had some where I'm just like, I don't even like this movie. I just thought it'd be neat to have.
Yeah.
And then I started paring it down, and then I realized I should probably hold on to the ones that won't make it to DVD.
Yeah.
And you know, and then they're just sitting there. They're just sitting there like nothing. Yeah.
I do have to go through my storage unit as well. But I feel like a lot, because I have a ton of shit that I just taped off television in the 80s. And so you get the really awesome commercials.
That's the best part about watching old things you tape. It's just the fucking commercials.
There's I have old SNL episodes, and you see like I remember the commercials for Return of the Living Dead.
Oh, nice.
And stuff like that. So along with like those classic like 80s Budweiser and Levi commercials.
Oh, there was Spuds McKenzie.
Spuds.
Yeah, I think it was awesome.
The original party dog.
Fucking Spuds McKenzie, and so few people actually remember that Spuds McKenzie was the dog of the McKenzie brothers from the SCTV, Rick Moranis and Dave Thomas, Strange Brew. Spuds McKenzie came from fucking Strange Brew.
Yeah.
And no one, people remember Spuds McKenzie, and so few people remember the McKenzie brothers.
I still have. That's so crazy because I just remember that saying the storage unit. I actually have one that I got for Christmas. It was like a Spuds McKenzie.
Lamp?
No, it was like a doorstop. You put it to keep doors open, but it had like, he had like a Budweiser hat on. Yeah, but that's crazy.
Canadian Bulldog.
Do you know what and Spuds McKenzie have in common?
We're both white.
You both guest starred on Married with Children.
Oh!
Do you remember that Futurama episode?
Thanks, Trivia Matt.
Slurm Factory, and they have a Slurms McKenzie, the original party slug. And then, are you okay, Slurms? And he, like, takes off his sunglasses, just got bloodshot eyes. He's like, I'm so tired of partying.
Oh, my gosh. What's next for you, Darren?
I have a movie opening called The Barons. It's a monster. It's like a creature feature with Stephen Moyer from True Blood.
Yep.
It's cool.
Suck it.
It's about the Jersey Devil. I love cryptozoology stuff. I love movies that have anything to do with like possible things that could be out there. It's about the Jersey Devil, which is this supposed creature that lives in the Pine Barrens of New Jersey. The 13th child of Mother Leeds, this woman, supposedly a witch, had 12 children, and the town folk got together, this is in the 1700s, and said, if you have any more kids, you're banished from the town. So she went into seclusion, and a year later, the town folk went to visit her, and she was pregnant with her 13th child. Claims that she woke up, it was immaculate conception, she did not have sex with a man. They banished her from the town, and she cursed the town and cursed her unborn child and said, let the devil take it. It's the devil's child. So the legend is that she gave birth to this child, and it turned on her, killed the other siblings, and still lives in the Pine Barren. So that was the legend. And what I love about it is the sightings that people talk about, starting from the 1700s, going all the way to today, from reputable sources, from police, firemen, politicians, lawyers, doctors. I have all these books that talk about the sightings, and they're all pretty consistent of what they are. And the photographic evidence of it is pretty awesome as well. It's just horrible, like kind of mauled bat-looking camel. It's weird. It's hard to explain. Mm. This is a story of Stephen Moyer taking his family into the woods camping, and he's either going crazy or this thing is following them. I just finished that, and that's coming out this week.
But Eric saves them, right? Because he's good now.
Who's that? Oh, yes, the good vampire. Yes, of course.
No, he's going crazy because he's camping in New Jersey.
So that's coming out. And then we're moving on and doing Devil's Carnival 2. The first one.
Nice.
Yeah, the first one, the whole thing we did worked out. And so we're going to do it again. And we're doing
part two. Do you ever want to make, like, do you like kind of sort of being on the fringe? Or do you ever want to go back and go, okay, I'll make $150 million monster movie?
I'm ready to sell out again in a second. But I think here's the deal, is it's becoming harder and harder for filmmakers. It used to be like, even when I started like 5 or 10 years ago, you did a horror movie and it was in 1,000 screens, and a minimum 3,000 screens is a maximum, and that was pretty standard. Now there's such an so many people are making movies, and you don't have to have millions of dollars anymore. You can have a camera and a Final Cut system, and it's becoming harder and harder for filmmakers to get distribution. And since now with VOD and all this online stuff, the distribution model is changing. So I'm trying to stay ahead of it and change with it. And doing it, what I love about what I'm doing now is that I do control my fate. I'm not reliant on a studio. I'm not reliant on someone saying to me, you know, this is commercial, this is not. So I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. Now, that being said, if they came back to me and said, hey, we want you to do Saw 24, Jigsaw in space, you better believe I'm back there.
It has to end in space. All the good ones do.
Do you know what? I really, this is one of my probably biggest failures as a director, is I really wanted to reboot the Leprechaun series because I fucking love the Leprechaun series. And yeah. I had this amazing pitch and I'm serious about it. I actually spent time on it. I had a PowerPoint presentation.
When did you...
Recently. They were going to reboot the Leprechaun series, and I joked about it since the beginning of my career that that's my passion project. And I had this whole idea, the Leprechaun finds a time machine and goes back to the Old West. The Colorado Gold Rush. Are you serious? That's perfect.
Oh, my God. Do you get Warwick Davis?
I would get Warwick back, and it would be a reboot, but it would still... I think he's great.
Do a reboot. Get Dinklage in there.
Oh, my God. So I'm so serious about this, and I actually wrote out this treatment with a friend of mine, and we had it like he shows up in a whorehouse, and the first thing is, like, imagine the whole thing that the time machine puts him under a bed and people are having sex and he comes out, he's got a six shooter, you have firefights, the Colorado Gold Rush. So I go in, I'm so excited, and I pitch it. I'm in a room full of executives. They're all stone faced, not a smile amongst them. And like I finish the pitch and I kind of sit there. No one, like, there's not a single smile. And they're like, thank you, Darren, you can leave now.
Whoa.
And then the next, seriously, a week later, I see that WWE is doing it with that wrestler. I forget his name. The little wrestler. I can't think of what his name is. I'm sure people are listening.
Doink the Clown.
But they have a wrestler who is going to be playing the Leprechaun.
And, what?
I don't even know who they're guy directing it, but they did not like my pitch about Leprechaun back in the Old West.
Wow. That is a genius idea.
I know, right?
Yeah, I guess because they've already gone to space, and then they even went back to the Hood.
They did. They went back to the Hood. I'm a connoisseur of the Leprechaun movies. The Hood series are him back in the Hood and back to the Hood again. They're amazing. They're great.
Yeah.
They're great.
Yeah, they're the best ones. Leprechaun space...
not so great, but
it is really. There's moments where it becomes aware of itself, and then therefore just stops being fun for the person watching it. Ah. But it does have. I'm forgetting his name now. He was the. He was in Return of the Living Dead. It was the black guy.
I know you're talking about, but I mean, they do have some great cameos from Jennifer Aniston to Ice Cube.
Yeah,
Ice T. They just make me happy, and I think that those are the kind of movies I would love to make. Go back and make something that is just so ridiculous and over the top. And
but if you take it like, it's like if you do the thing and you just take it with the utmost sincerity, that's what makes it good.
That's what makes it hilarious. And that's the whole thing is like you play it as if it's a serious like Western drama, whatever like that. But it's Leprechaun. That's fantastic.
Like the opening of Austin Powers 3. I don't know if you remember it, but the one where they have like Tom Cruise is playing Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah.
But like the opening is just like over the top and it looks like a fucking great action movie. Like I wish they had gone that direction with the third movie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing that people always forget is just if like the way to make a great parody is to just take it seriously, treat the genre with respect and have everyone just be like, don't wink, because then that makes it fucking lame.
No, exactly. And I think you're right. If you film the thing like Deadwood, it would be hilarious. I think
yes,
the whole thing
exactly.
Would be, I think the thing would be great. So what I'm doing next is I'm seriously going to start a campaign for myself, and I hope Twitter follows me on this, and Facebook. I get some followers about having me direct and reboot the Leprechaun series. I'm going to put all my eggs in that basket.
Kickstart that.
I really should.
Who owns the Leprechaun?
I think it's Lionsgate and WWE now.
Oh, WWE.
So
now.
I went into Lionsgate when the ones where they did not find it funny, and I thought it was awesome.
Why don't you reboot the Wishmaster?
That's another one. There are some great '80s titles that are
really
obscure enough that you could do and not upset everybody.
Yeah. You know what? I think you could do an awesome Candyman.
Candyman
fucked me up.
Yeah, that is.
Tony Todd.
Tony Todd is still like an intimidating dude. Yeah. I run into him time again.
Yeah,
he's
I'm just like, oh fuck, I'm sorry, I don't feel good around you.
There are certain horror icons like Bill Moseley, who's one of the nicest dudes in the entire world. Yet he plays like Otis, and he's terrifying.
Right.
But he's so nice and friendly. Tony Todd though freaks me out every time I see him. I clam up a little
yeah,
bit.
I saw him at a Comic-Con, and I was like, oh, can I get a picture with you? And he just kept, what was this show? He ended up being on like ER or something like that.
Was he?
Yeah, he had like a short stint on some show. He's like, watch that show, man. And I was like, oh, don't.
Aww.
Yeah, don't pitch that to me.
I saw him in a French movie, and it was weird.
Really?
He was speaking French.
I saw him in a weird movie that had Mark Hamill in it recently called Sushi Girl, where Tony Todd is the lead. Have you heard of this movie?
I've seen the title, yeah.
Yeah, it's a crazy movie, but Tony Todd is the lead of this movie and carries it. And like I've always seen him play that like over the top killer, bad guy, whatever. It's good.
Speaking of Mark Hamill movies, The Guyver.
What's that? Oh my god, that's the suit.
The
right?
suit, yeah.
Yes, of course.
Oh yeah. Oh, wow, yeah.
80s to me is the 80s movies that came out have some of the craziest, most awesome, like The Gate you were just talking about.
I love The Gate.
Oh,
I still watch it. That's one of those movies that I'll pop on, you know, like when people are over. That or Creepshow 2.
It scares me, though. Sometimes I try to revisit movies I have such fond memories of, and I don't know if it's, I should stop watching those movies because I watched Highlander again because I remember I had fond memories of Highlander as a kid, and then I popped it back in.
You were thinking of Highlander 2.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't live up. Same thing with Garbage Pail Kids. I love that movie, and then I saw it again. Not so great.
Yeah, it's not. No. I remember it being so much like more cool than it ended up being.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love that era of movies.
There was because the 80s was really before our culture discovered irony.
Yeah.
Or at least it was sleeping in the 80s. Yeah. And so everyone would just make, like, it was the coolest movie ever. Like, I think that was really that element. Like, it's that thing that Tim and Eric are always, like, trying to capture or capture. It's just, like, it's people who just think that they're making the most amazing thing. You know, like, their characters. I don't mean Tim and Eric. I mean the characters that they portray.
Yeah,
like, what they're doing is the most awesome thing ever. But in the 80s, like, people really, really, really believe that no matter what the fucking movie was.
Yeah, it's it was a good time for movies, though.
Yeah.
But again, I'm just gonna keep the boxes of the VHS and not watch them again because I don't want to have those memories tarnished.
Yeah. If you just got to go back and.
When was the last time you saw Guyver? I mean, I actually went back and watched that movie.
Oh my god, I haven't seen that movie in years.
No, I'm sure it's not going to hold up to whatever you remember it to be. No.
I remember the suit like bursting out of it. Like the thing gets implanted and then it bursts out and then just becomes like the suit. But it had that sort of It had that kind of like monster, like Japanese monster, movie, you know, like the kaiju suits, where the it didn't really look like armor.
Yeah.
It's like it's supposed to look like armor, but it was all bendy.
Yeah,
you know, what holds up. Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Oh,
that's
hell
the movie
yeah, it
that
does.
Fucking the Kyoto Brothers. That fucking thing holds the fuck up. That's great.
That is a classic.
Did you really need to swear that much?
Did I say it a lot?
It fucking holds the fuck up.
Oh, you better fucking believe it,
Jonah. You're doing it again.
Oh, the fuck,
fucking it. Darren, you've been a super fun guest. I would love to have you come back on sometime and just talk like fucked up 80s horror movies.
Well, by that time I'll have watched Let Your Puppets Come.
Let my puppets come. Would you just let them come? All they want to do is come.
Yeah. So there's actually songs in it? Are you guys?
No, Jonas.
Because I was going to make a musical version of it unless it was already done. But,
there's no reason that you can't.
I think we should.
No. Well, me and Chris will write all the songs. Impromptu.
Yeah.
Oh, did you guys see that little featurette about the making of Les Miserables?
Les Miserables.
I always had a problem with it. That and the word jewelry. But it's a musical that they're recording the singing live while they're shooting the
movie.
That's
insane. That's
and
crazy.
Everyone has a little earpiece, and they have a piano player or keyboard player off to the side that goes along with what they set the pace as they're singing. And so they're doing all the acting and singing the songs. It's almost
like you're seeing Les Mis.
Yeah.
But in a movie.
Yeah, but like was still with fucking crazy cinematic shots.
We tried to do that once on one of the musicals, and it's insane. I mean, that's really hard. If they pull that off, it's amazing.
Check out there's a little featurette on it online right now.
I think
it
looks great.
Yeah.
I think it looks like a real, it's going to be really good looking.
Anne Hathaway's in it. And then
Hugh Jackman,
yeah.
The other girl.
Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe's the other girl.
The guy.
The long hair. Russell Crowe.
It's
Russell.
I know you're talking about.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe's the other girl.
What's her name? The blonde girl.
Yeah.
She was in the Megan Fox movie, the horror film.
And she was also in Mean Girls.
Jennifer's Body?
Crowe.
Jennifer's Body. Who's the other girl in Jennifer's Body?
That's Amanda Seyfried.
Yes. Yeah. Like in the fucking featurette, like it shows her just like belting out this thing while crying. And you're just like, holy shit, they fucking all got it. They're great.
I mean, you really, if this model continues to work for you, you could be this sort of like P.T. Barnum of movies and just like have your like, fucking traveling movie show.
It's cool. And I mean, listen, the thing which is badass about it is it's a lot of work. I mean, literally driving 60 cities in a van that smells like tears and sadness. It's just horrible. But the reality was I'm being drunk nightly and eating truck stop food. But it's awesome because I set my own thing. I set the schedule. I set the theaters it's going to play in, and like, there's no one there, and it's no studio saying you have to do this or this. It's cool, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, but it's worth it because it at the end of the day, you take full responsibility for everything.
That's the thing. If it succeeds, it's because of us. If it fails, it's because of us.
And at least that way, you can learn from it. Listen, exactly. if someone else controls your thing and it fails, and you're like, "Fuck, I didn't have a chance to." If you control your thing and it fails,
like,
you go.
What
can I do better next time? At least you can learn from that.
No, it is, and that's why I like it. It's putting the fate of the art back in the artist's hands. So,
are you Darren Bozeman on Twitter? Is it your full name or is it just Bozeman?
I think it's Darren_Bozeman on Twitter.
Oh, Bozeman.
Yeah,
I've been saying Bozeman the whole time.
No one gets it. It's totally fine.
But it's OU. Like I should have. say Oach.
It's Darren_Bozeman, and on Facebook it's Darren Lynn Bozeman.
I feel like we should re-record the entire podcast.
Let's start again. Let's start again.
I'll start from
back to one.
Get the bag. Get the bag.
Sorry.
Yes.
Get your stupid bag. Our guest is Darren Bozeman.
Hey guys.
Who directed the Saw movies?
Yes, the Saw movies.
God damn it! And you were so polite to not correct me the entire time. Because people must do that shit to you all the time.
I'm giving up.
I'll end this thing on a great last Comic-Con story, which is one of my favorite and horrible things is I'm at Comic-Con and Saw 3 is there. And I'm at a bar and I've had a little drink. And this guy comes up to me and goes, holy shit, you're Darren. I was like, yeah. And he goes, oh my God, I'm a huge fan. Can my wife and I take a picture with you? And I say, okay. His wife comes over and he goes, oh my God, my husband loves your movies. That's all he talks about. He's got your posters all over his wall. I'm like, awesome. And so they're taking pictures and they call their friends over. And they say, hey, this is Darren, the director. And they're like, oh my God, your movie's so disturbing.
Oh no, I know
you.
Where this is going.
And so they're all coming over and they're taking pictures. Now they're buying me shots. And like, we're taking shots. And they're like, man, what was it like working with Ellen Burstyn and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what? And then I realized someone told him that's Darren, thinking Darren Aronofsky. And so all of a sudden, I've got 60 people around me now, and they're all buying me shots, and they're all talking about Requiem for a Dream and Fountain and all this other stuff. And I'm like, and I didn't know what to say at that point. I'm like,
You say nothing.
Well, finally, one of the guys whispers something to his friend, and then you see them all kind of reverse robot out of there.
Yeah.
But that was an awkward one because I didn't know. Like, I have 60 people around me. Do I tell them? Sorry, do I kill that dream?
Yeah.
And I'm getting quoted lines. That's actually what it was. It was the Maid Marian. Some guy goes, Maid Marian. And I was like, why is he quoting Requiem for a Dream lines? And then I realized, I think I'm Darren Aronofsky.
Well, you know, because you directed it.
Of course.
I like the Requiem for a Dream runner we've had through this episode.
I know. Yes.
Nicely cast.
Yes. How often does it? Well, you know, it was on my mind today because I saw
a double-sided dildo.
Well, I saw I was walking with my friend, you know, Jack, who works at Comedy Central.
Yep.
So we had lunch and there were two giant delivery trucks that were backed up against each other, and someone was and delivery guy like literally like open and delivery guys were throwing boxes back and forth, and I was like, oh, it's Requiem for a Dream, and then he said, oh no, they're like dogs, you got to hose them off so they'll separate, and so we just made all these dumb ass to ass truck jokes, and so Requiem of a Dream for a Dream has been on my mind all day.
Poop forever, back and forth.
Yeah. No. That's you and me and everyone you know.
Yeah,
everyone know.
Can I give one last plug?
Is sure.
Okay? Devil'sCarnival.com, thedevil'scarnival.com, and that's where they can get the DVD and the soundtrack and all that good stuff.
TheDevil'sCarnival.com.
TheDevil'sCarnival.com.
So not just Carnival, the not Devil's Carnival.
CarnivalCruiseLines.com. Carnival. Hey,
it's just like Facebook. Drop the.
The.
Yeah, no, but someone already has Facebook, Devil's Carnival. Right, the devil. We'll see even more.
I'll be back here next time promoting my pornography puppet movie, which looking I will forward turn into to a musical.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm excited.
Starring Warwick Davis.
Of course.
Elbow deep. Aaron Bowser.
For him, that's only 4 inches.
Enjoy your Bowrito.
Excellent. Gentlemen, thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. It was nice to meet you.
Yes, nice meeting you as well.
Bowsman!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.